Rusty Quill presents.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wake of Corrosion, Season 4, Episode 2, Observance.
This is Chief Engineer George Gilbert of Bunker A12. This is a public broadcast to any survivors out there. Whilst life is difficult within these walls, we're aware of the hardships people still face out there in the dark. This is a message of hope to all those still living in the ashes of the United Kingdom and beyond. We are on a path of salvation. Even the most minor of victories are still worth celebrating. There is hope, survivors. There is a way forward. We're sure of it, now more than ever. Before we continue, please be advised that the content of our broadcast is not suitable for all listeners. Today, I bring you a pre-recorded message from Professor Ryan and the others as they left the school that Naya had turned into a cult commune. I'll play it for you now.
Come in, Bunker A12. A12? I thought as much. I knew it was getting a bit late. They'll have shut off most generators for the evening. No matter. This will still broadcast, so we'll share this part of the journey.
Never thought I'd be on a broadcast from A12. You get so used to being a listener, you sometimes forget it's all so real.
I try to ignore it, mostly. It makes me uncomfortable. I'm surprised it doesn't make you feel worse, Elliot. Almost all of your journal has been broadcast for so many to hear.
Has it really been that many, though, Claire? Because honestly, other than that commune, we've really only seen a few people out here. And it seems to be getting less by the day.
Mom, are we nearly there?
Yes, sweetie, almost. Go back to sleep, all right? It won't be long.
I'm glad they're all right. I got a few funny looks as I was leaving with them just before... just before everything kicked off.
You did great, Seb. I can't thank you enough.
It's only the first step, Claire. One of many I need to make to atone for...
You can't think about it that way. It's enough that you left it all behind.
You keep saying that, but it just... I'll get there.
It's a dark place, Seb. Truly.
You too.
Elliot, I hope you don't mind me asking, and if you don't want to share it with me or on the broadcast, just say, no obligation, but... Well, Naya was adamant you weren't meant to exist. What's the deal with that?
Honestly, I don't know, but...
I do. Look, I have to confess something, and... Thank God. Oh, this is the hardest thing. But I think most of you know already. The Roman that we left in the school. The kids. They're not the ones I know. I knew. Now, don't get me wrong. I am Claire, and I do have a Scott Imogen and Roman of my own, but they're not... They're not these ones.
I thought as much. And, where are yours?
Mine are all dead. In my world, they died. I thought it'd be easy to love the ones here. I thought it would be just like seeing them all again. Dream come true. But it wasn't. It isn't. It
It's like having something you love and cherish break and trying to replace it with another matching version of it. It might look the same, feel the same, so on, but it isn't. It never will be. And I know it's no one's fault, but it's hard. It's hard to love something that isn't yours. This is another Claire's family, and, well, she didn't make it.
But, what? But all this time, Claire, I why didn't you tell me sooner? We've shared so much between us, but why not this?
I couldn't. Not around everyone in that commune. I didn't want anyone hearing and making a fuss about it, or worse. It was bad enough that Naya knew, and somehow Jackson seemed to as well.
Are you going to tell Roman?
If he's able to manifest himself at age 12 like he did at the school, then maybe. I don't know.
You have to. You have to. I can't keep that from him. You can't.
Elliot, this isn't your secret to tell.
And it's not yours to keep either. He has a right to know. You know that. Deep down, you know that. You owe it to our Claire, wherever she is, whatever has happened to her. You owe her that.
I'll think about it.
Well, he's right, Claire. But that still doesn't answer my question about Elliot.
In a way, it kind of does.
All right. Well, I'm going to need a bit more than that.
I don't exist in Claire's world. That's what Naya said. That's what Claire said. And Jackson is what they all said. Given everything that has happened, I'm inclined to believe them. In fact, I know it's true. All my life I felt odd, different, out of place. I mean, it could just be a coincidence, something that seems more relevant because of this information, but I don't know. It feels like more. Naya claimed that I and other people like me were to blame for the spiraling star, their god, it seems, not being able to completely take over.
Yeah, but why? That's what I don't understand.
I'm not entirely certain, but it's odd, isn't it? So far, we haven't encountered duplicates of anyone. Just familiar people with completely different memories. The others are missing, shadows, or, well, dead. Take Roman, for instance. This Claire doesn't know my Roman. Not really, because he's different. And her Roman is no longer with us. Professor Ryan and the entire population of A12, it seems, were destroyed in the other world. The one that Roman and I temporarily visited without knowing. I don't think there can be two with the same person. Not anymore. Not since this convergence. But us. People like me, and perhaps even Jim from A7. We're anomalies. People with no duplicates, no matching pair or shadow, whatever you want to call it. We've never had anyone, even before the convergence. I think that's slowing this entity down, this spiraling star. And if it's not that, I've got absolutely no idea what it could be. And perhaps somewhere in all of that is our answer, our way out of this. Something we do know for certain, though, is that Naya wanted to get rid of us, and, well, I don't like thinking this way about people, but thankfully she's gone. I hate to think what the world would really be like if the star was able to have its way.
Except she isn't the only one.
She's the only one in this area, though, right?
Sure, but what is distance when these rifts exist? That in-between world doesn't play by the rules we're used to, Elliot. There are others like her, and if they really, really wanted to find us, find you, they'd find a way. Hell, I'd wager at least a few of her loyal followers are still alive back at the school.
Fuck. Fuck. I really don't like having a target on my back.
He's right, Elliot. There are others. Naya had apprentices. But maybe Roman's new condition, or whatever we're calling it, can be used to protect you. Us. We've already seen the power over the creatures he seems to have. Who's to say what else he's capable of?
Who's to say that isn't killing him? Sorry. Sorry, that was unnecessary. So, Seb, you've been to the in-between, the void, whatever it is.
Unfortunately, I still remember the first time I went there. It was... Honestly, I'm not sure how to describe it.
Could you tell us about it, perhaps? We've got a long journey ahead of us, and I feel as though it's quite the unique experience which, well, if nothing else, will help others to understand the extent and the severity of the state of our world. Isn't that what all this is about, Ryan?
Used to be. Still is, I suppose.
Sharing experiences is what the broadcast is about, Zeb, so if you're comfortable with that.
Very well. Claire, you've been there too as well, haven't you?
I have.
Well, then perhaps we can compare our experience of it later. It's not something we ever had a chance to talk about back at the school. All right. It was about a week or so after this all started when I first visited it. By this point, I'd already made up my mind about joining, well, pretending to join those who wanted all of this to happen. I lived somewhere else at the time, Aberystwyth, a lovely Welsh coastal town if you've ever been. I was a student at the university a good few years ago, and well, it's hard to leave a town like that once you're there. So I ended up staying on for a bit afterwards.
Oh, tell me about it. I went there myself too. Weird to think that we were probably both there at the same time. In the town, I mean, not at university, obviously. Sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted. Go on.
Yeah, that's quite all right, Elliot. It's a memorable place for certain. Not sure I could ever go back there, though. Not now. Not after what I'm about to tell you. So, I was really struggling for work at around the time this happened. I'd been laid off from my previous job in a care home, and there weren't any others nearby hiring. There was no way I had the money to move, so I scoured websites hunting for another job, something, anything, to keep the bills paid until I could sort something else out. I ended up taking a job cleaning this old hotel on the seafront. It wasn't the best place around, but it did have a decent amount of function rooms, which quite a lot of the local communities and groups hired out. Can't really say I enjoyed the cleaning part, but getting to have a glimpse at all the different sorts of people these groups brought in really broadened my interests. One in particular, called the Stargazing Society, got me unexpectedly hooked on astronomy. After a few weeks of researching the topics I overheard them talking about, my eavesdropping became more frequent, and I started to understand more and more of their talks. It stopped being jargon and became coherent. That was until one particular evening, when I was mopping the adjacent corridor, or at least pretending to, so that I could listen. I know I should have just upped and joined the club, but I could never quite bring myself to take the leap. Anyway, the guy who ran the group, Rory Ewan was his name, was speaking quieter than usual in hushed tones, the ones we all reserve for secrets. Of course, I quickly positioned myself to hear as much as possible.
The date, time, and location is written in my journal. I want you to cast your eyes over it as you leave. It is ordained to be that very night. Be prepared, followers. Be prepared.
Now, listening in is one thing, but snooping around is entirely something else, and by all accounts isn't something I'd usually ever consider doing, let alone acting upon. And, well, I think you know where this is going. Yeah, I couldn't help myself. I just had to know. What a lot of people consider to be the rude behaviour of guests and employees ignoring cleaners, well, I considered it a boon at this moment. I positioned myself close to the exit, knowing they would be leaving soon, and turned my back to them, pretending to dust or mop or something mundane that they wouldn't notice. And, as I had expected, they were deep in discussion about this event that they were all so excited about. Through various snippets of conversation, I managed to piece together the date, a loose-ish time, and most importantly, the location. A steep hill at the northern end of the promenade, aptly named Constitution Hill. My best guess was that once on the other side of that hill, away from the town, the light pollution of Aberystwyth was dulled enough to see whatever it was they were all so excited about. One thing stuck with me, though. In overhearing the timings of the event, I also caught snatches of a particular conversation that troubled me slightly. Two members seemed to be talking about someone in particular in a way that made me intensely uncomfortable. One said, "Do you think there'll be enough?" To which another replied, "There's enough elsewhere. It won't really matter. Rory knows what he's doing." This cryptic dialogue raised all sorts of questions. If I wasn't going to attend before, I certainly was now. It wasn't long before the day came of their meeting. I knew it was sometime between 9 and 10 p.m, as whilst I hadn't heard specific times, it was clear that it was to be shortly after sunset. I hung around the area and did my best to blend in, to look like any old hiker, whilst keeping an eye out for any familiar faces arriving. After about 20 minutes, I saw a few people walking up the steep incline that led off the promenade. They were relaxed in their approach, so I figured they were arriving early. So as not to raise suspicions or risk being questioned about something which I knew nothing about, I decided to leave it a little longer. It was difficult, I'll tell you that. I was fearful of missing the event altogether. It felt like I'd been waiting far longer than I really had, but before long I could see some more people I vaguely recognised heading up. I loosely followed a few of them for a bit, but then peeled off before they got to a part of the path I knew wasn't part of the hiking loop anymore. They got a good look at me, that I know, but I knew it would happen, so I just smiled at them as though nothing were the matter. I got the distinct impression that they didn't recognise me from the hotel. I didn't really notice it until later, but all of them seemed to be wearing more clothes than I expected them to be. Sorry, that sounded weird. They seemed to be layered up, and not in the sense that it was going to get cold later, which it absolutely wasn't. It was a sweltering day. It was almost as though they had an extra pair of clothes underneath their current ones. I realise now what they were all trying to hide and how they'd rammed their backpacks full of supplies for something that, well, I don't think even they were fully prepared for, let alone anyone else. Knowing that wading through the undergrowth was absolutely on the cards for me to get anywhere near what was going on, I'd worn my extra thick jeans and coat. Glad I did as well. It wasn't the easiest of tasks to traverse the banks of Consti and stay quiet. Luck has it, there was a decent breeze that day and the sea below was roaring. As I drew closer, I started to realise how much of a secluded spot they'd chosen and how they themselves must have waded through a significant swathe of heather and nettles to get where they were. Fully concealed from any paths and, most importantly, from the town below, they had nothing but the vast expanse of sea and stars as their audience. And, of course, me. For a while, nothing really happened. Most of them milled about chatting in hushed conversations that I struggled to hear over the breeze and crashing waves. What made me feel a little uncomfortable, though, was the closer huddle of them with what appeared to be a bag of some sorts in the centre. A large one. I felt as though they were trying to hide it, even in this secluded spot, and I soon found my suspicions were correct. About half an hour later, my legs were numb, and nothing of interest had happened. It was pitch dark now, and I feared how safe the return would be given the sheer drops that surrounded us on this secluded bit of headland. I was debating whether to leave before it grew any darker when the society fell into a hush all of a sudden. I heard Rory's voice then booming above the waves. "Cast your eyes upwards, my friends. The time is upon us." He sounded so different now, so reverent and powerful. It was as though all of my focus were drawn to his every word, and without hesitation I followed his commands. Sure enough, there was a meteor burning across the sky. A shooting star, some might call it. But whilst all others I'd ever seen had burned up in an instant and as such a fleeting occurrence, this one was so slow, its movements were almost imperceptible. But there it was, burning in the atmosphere. I was transfixed. So beautiful, its trail a blazing wonder. Then, in a rush, Rory's voice came back to me. "Bear witness, friends." And almost like watching clockwork in action, the society members gathered around Rory in a perfect half circle. One of them stepped forward and stood hunched over a few feet in front of him, and in her hand a knife. Instantly my heart rate went sky high. I knew something weird was happening, something peculiar that caused me to instinctively remain hidden for so long, but nothing of this magnitude. This was only amplified when I saw that this particular woman was hunched over someone. A bound and gagged woman. Some poor soul who had clearly only just become conscious. She was facing away from me, but in my mind's eye, I could see the panic written across her face, the absolute fear that must have coursed through her veins. I felt immediately like crying out to try and help her, but realized quickly how futile this would be. I was one man hidden precariously amongst the undergrowth, trying to help a woman with a knife to her throat, surrounded by 20-odd people who all seemed perfectly comfortable with this situation. What happened after, I find it hard to remember, even all this time after. I knew that they started speaking in a language I didn't recognize, or calling out different things and directing their voices toward the sky. Then there was blood, a crimson stream that ran off the cliff face. I remember pulses shooting out from the meteor that still somehow blazed through the atmosphere. I think one of them blinded me, something did. Something bright and sickening, like how I imagine an atomic bomb must seem from miles away. When I came back to my senses, I was still perched on the edge of a cliff. But instead of looking out over the raging sea of Aberystwyth, I saw nothing but a barren horizon devoid of anything. Scanning around, desperate to find some familiarity, I distinctly recall seeing the pier so small and distant. But rather than being firmly fixed to the promenade, it floated at a jaunty angle on its own separate piece of land that held a chunk of the coastline together. It quickly became obvious that everything behind me was a ruinous wasteland, everything in shades of grey. I stood up then, desperate to see more of this bizarre mirror of our world. Forgetting myself entirely, my heart sank like an anchor when I heard a voice call out from my right. "Who the fuck are you?" it said. Such shock littered with malice. And I just did the first thing that came to my head. It's the reason I'm still alive, but I'm not sure it was worth it.
What did you do?
Not so much what I did, but what I said. Something I'd heard them hint at during the course of the evening. This is the new order of things.
I'm so sorry.
Sorry? What for?
That you had to see an innocent person killed like that. That you had to make that choice and stick with it. That the alternative was your own death.
I think for many that may have been better.
Seb, right now? Right now? It's best that you're here. You might not think that you did much, but I doubt that any of us would be here had you not set all of this in motion. Had you not helped me overcome the Order's control.
I have a question, though, if it's all right with you, Seb. Your story implies that you were there when it all started. I mean, the world was normal before that ritual you saw, right? I mean, as far as you're aware.
As far as I was aware, yes.
And what was the data...
Sorry to interrupt your heart-to-heart back there, but we've got a slight problem. Remember that bridge we crossed on the way here, Elliot?
It's gone, isn't it?
Oh, just a little... Yeah.
Fuck.
All right. Let's start thinking about alternative routes, shall we? No point idling here and wasting fuel. Yeah, how are we doing on that front anyway, Ryan?
Dwindling. If this detour isn't too long, I think we'll still make it, though. Well, I hope we do.
Hope. Fuck that word. All right. Let's do this.
Bloody hell. I can't believe what Sebastian's been through. I'm really interested to hear what the date was when this ritual, as Elliot chose to call it, happened. It seems as though Sebastian insinuated someone was sacrificed. Hard to tell, though, given his fading memories of the events. You know, there are times when I'm going through all this and I catch myself, actually catch what I'm saying. And it's real, isn't it? It's all bloody real and I can't deny it. My only hope now, as I'm sure it's the same for a lot of you, is that with the demise of Naya and what happened at the old school, we may find a way forward. At least in our area, who knows, maybe further. For now, though, I'm just glad that Ryan, Elliot, and the rest of them are heading here. Heading home. I'm not a religious man, but if I were to pray, I would pray for their safe return. We'll be back again soon, survivors. Until then, this is George Gilbert signing off. Don't wander in the dark.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more news and updates, follow us on social media at Wake of Corrosion. You can also support the show via our Patreon at patreon.com/Wake of Corrosion. Joining at any tier will get you access to all future episodes 1 week early. Wake of Corrosion was written, directed, and produced by Sean Pellington and is part of the Rusty Quill Network, with voice acting from Kieran Walsh as Professor Ryan, Sean Pellington as Elliot, Brianne Leeson as Claire, Liliana Pellington as Immy, Phil Jankowskis as George, David Alt as Sebastian. Intro theme, Phantasm, and outro theme, Shadowlands 5 Antechamber, were created by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0. Both pieces are reduced from their originals with fade-out effects, character voiceover, and radio static effects. Morse code SFX from morsecode.world, courtesy of Stephen C. Phillips. Full credits and transcripts can be found at wakeofcorrosion.com. Thank you for listening, and remember, don't wander in the dark.
As always, here's a shout out to our generous Patreon subscribers who have helped make this show what it is today. AI Munagatari, James, Andrew, David, Mandy, Tatiana, Brandy, Sai, Mech G, Karen, Eileen, Christy, Martina, KM, Paul, and Twiglets. Thank you all so much.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.